are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Rachel Kruger, and I am happy to be here tonight for an episode of Last Word Soccer Club Radio. We are brought to you by Last Word on Sports, Inc., the Beautiful Game Network, Icarus FC, and of course, Roughneck Scarves. Shout out to our sponsors. Thank you so much. We wouldn't be here without y'all. I'm not alone tonight. I am joined. We need to like come up with a name for this trio because this is, I think, the third time that we have done a podcast together. Of course, I'm talking about myself, Jamie Rook, and Harvey Cruz. So, Jamie, our friend across the pond, how are you, sir?
Very good, thank you. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on here, so I'm glad to be back.
Glad to have you back, my friend. Harvey Cruz, who enjoyed a very chaotic match last night that we will be talking about here soon. How are things up in the north?
Very good. Apparently, it's been, I was told that this week marked the first days of summer. And yet, it's been raining here. It's been gray skies. It's been cloudy. So I'm not sure what these things mean anymore. When I was in middle school, quick story, my English teacher, Mrs. Dorian, told me that the longest days were the summer days and the quickest days were the winter days. And I totally believe it because I don't know if it's the heat or if it's just waking up early for the gym or if it's just drinking gallons of water a day. But these things just drag on, man. It's ridiculous. So that's how it's going for me here for now.
Yeah, well, it's been summer in Florida for like 3 months. Oh my gosh, it's so hot down here. It rained today for like not even 20 minutes and it like cooled it down at least by like 15 to 20 degrees. Like it's been so stinking hot down here. But I'm moving. I told the guys before we started recording, your girl's going back to Pittsburgh, home of the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. So I'm looking forward to that next month. But yeah, so that's what's new over here. And I cannot wait to get out of Florida, although I will miss my kids down here. I will miss the people that I worked with. But anyway, talking about soccer, we're just going to jump right into it. We have a pretty jam-packed show tonight, folks. We are going to talk, of course, about the Open Cup. We're going to talk about some MLS teams as the international break is over and teams are getting back into the swing of things with the regular season. We're halfway through the regular season. And of course, you know, this is kind of that time where you can actually legitimately start looking at the playoff table and the standings. So we're going to talk about some hot teams and some cold teams. And then, of course, we had some news this morning about the FIFA World Cup expanding rosters from 23 players to 26. So we'll do that. Our pick'ems. And then, of course, we will finish with last words. But let's get right into it, gentlemen. This past week has been the semifinals, the quarterfinals of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. We had one cup set, and then we had... we have a couple MLS teams going at it. So three games out of the four have been played. We are recording this on Thursday evening. I think it's on Wednesday next week. I will be there in the press box covering for Last Word on Soccer. Orlando City SC versus Nashville SC at Exploria Stadium. But we had some pretty entertaining games this week, folks. Sacramento Republic defeated the LA Galaxy 2-1. Our own Rob Jalon, I really hope I said his last name right, wrote a really good piece about that with a lot of really good quotes, especially from head coach Greg Vanney and defender Kelvin Leardom. So definitely check that out on our website, Last Word on Soccer. Harvey is going to tell us about New York Red Bulls in a chaotic victory over New York City FC. They won, what was that, Harvey? 3-0?
Yep, 3-0.
3-0.
Three second half goals. It was, as we break it down, we'll just repeat it. It was chaotic because at first, the first thing that blew my mind was that they didn't go with the traditional kits. The Rebels wore white throughout, which has worked for them if you're one of those kit luck type of people. And the city were allowed somehow to wear their lightning type, their zigzag kit, orange and whatnot, wherever that horrifying thing is. But it was wild, man, because the first 20 minutes, there were 11 fouls. There was a chance early for the Rebels, I believe, a few minutes in. And then from then on, throughout the first half, it was just like a slugfest. It was like barroom brawls throughout the pitch. Poor referee, if I can get his name correctly here. Let me see if I can get it. Matthew Thompson just didn't know what to do most of the time. The city players were hounding the ref throughout the first half. It was like a proper derby throughout. City had their chances. I don't want to hear that they didn't have chances. They did have chances. Despite only being three shots on target and some of them were light, they were a threat on the wings. Thiago Andrade, who made a fool of himself in the second half. And that, for me, just changed the game. Because despite the fact that he got shown the red card after the Lewis Morgan goal, which if you see is a really nice, well-worked goal. You float the ball over the top on a set piece to the left side. Aaron Long is alone one-on-one, wins the area duel, heads it down. And Morgan just beat everybody to a tap-in for the first goal. He's got 9 goals in all competitions, by the way, and an assist. So he's already on 10 goal involvements already. Not bad for a signing that not many people, didn't know much of, or just thought was like, okay, you know, it's one of those things. Please come good. And then the red card happened. John Tolkien said on the post game that it was like he was trying to say what's up, bro, to Thiago. Because if you look at the play, Thiago kind of kicks out as Sean Nealis is there trying to get the ball out of play. Sean Nealis goes down, Thiago goes over to him, and John Tolkien kind of bumps him. Not really bumps him, but he says what's up to him. And then Thiago, in front of the referee, it was as if the referee's trying to stop both of them. And Thiago literally tries to headbutt him and misses, but he headbutts the air, sort of like this is not the app comparison. If you go back a couple of days, back when Roy Keane tried to fight Alan Shearer, he tried to swing at him, but he missed and he caught air, similar to that type of stuff. So Thiago goes down, and he was one of the better players on the night. But he just couldn't get it going, and he was just frustrated like the whole city team. And from then on, it was just all Red Bulls. Luquinhos with a goal. Patrick Klimala should have done better, I think. Just sweep it away, but whatever. Luquinhos gets one touch, puts into the corner. He's got 7 goals in all competitions and 5 assists. So if you want to have a healthy debate, try to pick out an MVP between Lewis and Luquinhos. Not bad for 2 signings in the window. So that's another core piece for that team as well. And then Omir Fernandez gets in the act. He's a sub. And he mentioned how seriously he took the game because he's a Bronx native. And, of course, he scored last year at City to win that game 1-0. And now... Struber has won 3 games against City, which is as much as Patrick Vieira has. He's going to need some, it's going to be some time before anyone catches up to Jesse Marsh's 8 derby wins. And just the fact that they did this on a night where City fans fall amongst themselves. If you look at the videos on Twitter, they are definitely legitimate. I'm guessing people just threw things or I'm not sure what happened. The police got involved. It was ugly. There's a disbursement amongst the crowd. And that was all going on throughout the last 10 minutes of the match. And so now the Rebels are unbeaten in four straight derby games, I believe, in all competitions dating back to last year. They're unbeaten against the against City in the Cup. They've outscored them 8-0 in those competitions, in those games. And so the Red Bulls, honestly, I didn't want to say this until I guess the game was over. But now that we're talking about it here, you have to look at the Red Bulls as one of the favorites now for the Cup, given the rest of the field and given the fact that City and the Red Bulls are just 1 point apart. City are, boosted by the fact that they have two games in hand on the Red Bulls and one in hand on Philadelphia. And City play Philadelphia this weekend. It's a big one at Philly, I believe it is. So it's a massive confidence booster for the Red Bulls, who just showcased their skills. Steven Sirwanda, who came from the second team, got a hockey assist from Cameron Harper's cross to Amir's goal. And yeah, listen, 39 fouls were in this match. It was a real rough derby. It was just what you kind of expected. These two teams play again next month, July 17th, in Harrison. And then I believe they play in August, I want to say, at City. Thankfully, they played twice. Last year, they played three times. I don't know what that was about, but that's MLS fixtures for you. But yeah, just the game that the Rebels needed against a team like City, who were on some sort of like a minute streak without conceding a goal before the Colorado game, when they drew 1-1, and just the fact that they just couldn't get their game going at all. So it's a real boost for the Rebels as they head into California this weekend, which we'll talk about. And yeah, first semifinal appearance for the Rebels since 2017. When they made it to the final. They also beat City that year as well in the quarterfinals, I believe. Quarterfinals, so. Yeah, crazy game, chaotic game. Hope for the league's sake, you hope that it doesn't get that that fisticuffy, I guess. But, I mean, they don't like each other. They really don't like each other. And they're going to keep showing it to everybody. So they have it.
Good stuff, Harvey. And I will give you the floor is yours to gloat about, how do you say his name?
Luquinhas.
Luquinhas, player of the week.
Who blows my mind every single week because he does just the most audacious things. And, of course, the fact that Rachel Krieger just came out of nowhere and voted him as the MLS Player of the Week. And it's a good thing by you because you were vindicated. You were certified because he's on the Team of the Week. He got Goal of the Week. He got Player of the Week. And one of the leaders for Newcomer of the Year. So, and I forgot to mention this too. Luquinhas and Lewis Morgan, both 25. Carlos Coronado, also 25. So that's what good scouting and good.
Don't say that because I'm 25 and that's gonna just make me feel bad.
I'm 26. So,
Okay, fair enough. Jamie can still have a few years to match up with that. yeah, it's not often Harvey gets a player to beat Raul Ruiz Diaz in Player of the Week, but he got it this time. So we'll give you the floor to gloat a little bit on that. But good stuff, Harvey. I didn't really talk up too much about LA Galaxy and Sacramento Republic, but pretty much it was just the consensus was from Greg Vanney, from Kelvin Leardom, and even from the Sacramento Republic players that the Galaxy didn't take the game as seriously. They were caught. Lopez scored a goal for Sacramento Republic in the fourth minute to kind of get them up early. There was an own goal from Sacramento's Connor Donovan in the first half to tie it up at halftime. And then the hero of the game was Luis Fernandez. He scored the game winner in the 70th minute for Sacramento Republic. But that was the cup set of these matches. The other teams, of course, New York Red Bulls, New York City FC, both MLS sides, and then Orlando City and Nashville, both MLS sides, but, Sacramento Republic, a USL championship side, coming through and beating one of the better teams in Major League Soccer, if we're being honest, and one of the better coach sides in Major League Soccer with Greg Vanney. But last night there was a potential for another cup set, but Sporting Kansas City blew Union Omaha out of the water. Jamie, if you would like to talk about that for a little bit and about just, I mean, how much should Kansas City be like, oh my gosh, we won this game, because it's a USL League One side.
Yeah, I think from the Union Omaha point of view, it's been a bit of a romantic journey so far, knocking off Chicago and also Minnesota so far in this tournament. So it was a question of how far they could go beating MLS teams. But then from a Kansas City point of view, it's been a rough year, particularly in the league. They're 12th in the West at the moment. So I guess you take any win you can get, and a 6-0-1, no matter who it is against, isn't anything to be snuffed at. Daniel Shalloway with a brace, Felipe Hernandez with a brace as well. So I think it's a much-needed respite for the team. And one thing I'm wondering, something like, as I'm obviously not a Sporting Kansas City fan, I wouldn't have an opinion, but whether they'd take an Open Cup and then maybe miss out on the playoffs, I'd assume not, given that Open Cup isn't viewed as highly by some as it is others. That might be a question for Daniel Sperry next time he's on, about what he thinks of SKC winning the Open Cup. But I think, yeah, it's obviously an emphatic win against a lower league team, so you can't read into it too much, but it could be a sign of things to come. They're in their last five league games, I think it's two wins, a draw and two losses. So, yeah, it's very balanced at the moment, and they're way out of the playoff picture, but at this stage, a couple good results go in your favour, can put you right back above that line. So they'll be hoping that they can get back into playoff picture and maybe win the Open Cup as well.
Yeah, good stuff. They definitely, that game against Sacramento Republic and Sporting Kansas City is certainly going to be one to watch, because Sacramento is genuinely, they are a good team. And since they've been in the USL Championship, they have done very well for themselves. But the last game, last but not least, the only game that did not happen this week, was Orlando City SC versus Nashville, SC. Guys, I guess we can just make this a mid-show pick'em. Who you got? Why? What are you looking forward to in this game? I'm not going to lie. I think that on the road, I know that they just lost. I think they lost their unbeaten streak got, I think it was like 25 games, and Sporting Kansas City beat Nashville SC. But I do think Nashville will go into Orlando, and I think they'll put up a good fight. And I think they win 2-0. Do you guys have any thoughts about that game coming up?
I will say that Nashville need this more than Orlando. Not that Orlando doesn't need it, but just because of the fact that Nashville has been building up themselves since their expansion side as like a team to be reckoned with. I want to see how seriously these two teams take it. Not because of like the fact that you know, Sporting Kansas City put six past Union Omaha, and Red Bulls put out their first team lineup as well as City did, although they played a second string keeper. It's one thing that you play the quarterfinal, and it's another thing to win it, because winner plays the Rebels, I believe. And I'm not sure what the hosting is for it. One thing too, why is this game being played a week ahead of the rest? I don't understand that. Because I'm becoming like those European managers that complain about rest and fixture schedules and stuff like that, like 3 days rest instead of 4 days and whatnot. But whatever, I will go with Nashville in extra time, 2-1.
I was gonna say Nashville, but now that both of you have gone for them, I might play devil's advocate and go for Orlando. I think in terms of league perspective, obviously both playoff teams, both could easily have a deep run in the playoffs and even go all the way. So it'll be, as Harvey said, it'd be interesting to see how serious these two take it at this stage, because no matter how little value a knockout competition like this have might have to some teams, once you get into the latter stages, it'd almost be a mistake not to take it seriously, because a couple of games away from a trophy for these teams, especially Nashville, new team, new stadium, it'd make a lot of sense to throw all their eggs into this basket for just a couple of games. But I'm going to go, I think it could go to extra time. So I'm going to say Orlando and extra time instead.
Good stuff, guys. We are going to move on from the Open Cup to the MLS season. Like I said, we are halfway through the MLS season. We can actually legitimately start looking at the table now and see how teams are doing and whatnot. So we are going to talk about teams that we think are hot right now and teams that we think are cold. I'm going to pat myself on the back here for this first one, although I am going to let you guys go first. But I did not pick my team that I covered. So, for the longest time, Dan Sperry and I, we've always been back and forth, you know, him being a Sporting KC guy and me being Seattle about who's the bigger homer. So take that, Dan. I didn't pick my team. So I'm going to throw it to Harvey first, because I feel like it's only appropriate since he got player of the week. So yeah, we'll let you have the floor for a minute. Tell us why, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, why we should all take New York Red Bull seriously and as a legitimate contender, not just for the Open Cup, but for the MLS season.
Well, I'll just say this. They just beat the top team in the East at home. And it's Cup game regular season, they did it. And they're going to be playing the top team in the league this weekend. And the funny thing is that in the past month, they've lost two games. They lost their away streak, their historic away streak to Inter Miami. Then they lost at Charlotte as well. But in between all that, those two losses were the only two losses they've suffered since April 9th, when they lost to Montreal. Ever since then, 14 games, two losses, eight victories. Four draws, I believe, if the math is correct. And it's a fact that they found these ways to break these teams down and capitalize on teams' mistakes. Whether it's getting guys like Luquinhas in space, whether it's getting guys like Lewis Morgan in space. They've also done this with a very sneaky issue, if you want to call it a sneaky issue, in which their forwards of Patrick Kamala, Ashley Fletcher, who might not get his loan extended, by the way, Tom Barlow, who's getting a run on the side, and rookie Zach Ryan have all combined for 6 goals in all competitions, while Luquinhas has 7. I'm sorry, 6 league goals, while Luquinhas has 7 goals in all competitions, and Lewis Morgan has 9 in all competitions, and has 7 league goals on his own. And the fact that you brought those two guys in is incredible. The fact that Frankie Amaya has shined this year in midfield, whether it's with Drew Yearwood or Christian Caceres, and rumors have been floating about him, whether he's going to move to Europe. They've done this with, I guess, 1 left back on the team, even though they've played another left back, but they played John Tolkien mostly a left back. They brought Aaron Long has been back into prime form, and you can just see he's earned his national team call ups. He's been playing. He's been like an Ironman of sorts. I saw Sean Ellis. They've had to kind of rotate at right back ever since Kyle Duncan left, with guys like Dylan Nealis, Cameron Harper. Sometimes they put Lewis Morgan at right wing back as well. And just the fact that they've still contended, they're putting teams away. They're almost sweeping past teams, and they're hanging around with the best. They drew at Philly. They beat City. excuse me. They won at Orlando. They won at New England earlier. You could argue this is like the most informed team in the East. And the fact that they're doing this with just like a young core of players, one of the best goalies in the league in Carlos Carbonell, they are hot to me. They're a hot team. They're building something that I guess has been sustainable for a while. Last year wasn't like a throwaway year, but it was to see who amongst the core group of players will make a brand new core. And so this is without Andres Reyes, by the way, who, when he comes back, is going to be a difference maker as well, because he is, in my mind, an awesome center back. You watch when he comes back. So for me, my Red Bulls are a hot team to watch out for. They've been hot throughout this first half of the season. It'll be interesting to see how they manage the heat throughout the summer with their pressing style and how they go against teams that might need points against them for playoff spots. So it's going to be interesting to see, especially this summer window, because, you know, teams just are going to notice the top teams and they're able to warn them. So it's going to be interesting to see how they fare after this.
New York Red Bulls, keep an eye on them. To break up our East and East, I'm going to go with a team here in the West. And I really have enjoyed what Real Salt Lake has done this year. They are very much an under-the-radar type team. Right now, they are sitting in second place in the West with 28 points, just 2 points behind LAFC. I think the West has always been very notoriously close, and I think this is the first year in a really long time where the West and the East are both very, very close to each other. Real Salt Lake is an interesting team because in the last few games, looking at their month of May and June, they have lost twice and they have won four games. And the games that they've lost, Nashville is a little bit, that's pretty acceptable. But they lost against Vancouver. And Vancouver has always been one of those teams that's up and down and up and down and up and down. So to lose against a team like that is probably not a great look for Real Salt Lake. But they won convincingly over Austin FC, a team that has been doing really, really well this year, sitting right behind them in third place. And they have beaten Montreal, Houston, and San Jose. And listen, I get it. Those aren't the toughest of opponents, but a win is a win. And Real Salt Lake building up these points during these games is absolutely huge for them. They have three guys who are their leading goal scorers with three goals, being Bobby Wood, Justin Glad, and Sergio Cordova. But they're really, the wealth is being spread everywhere. Justin Merrim, Marcelo Silva, and Tate Schmidt all have two goals each. So there's really not one person. Like, you're not seeing Bobby Wood being their only goal scorer. And I think that that's a good thing for Real Salt Lake. They can't just have that one guy that is scoring the goals. They need to have a working unit and a good unit. And I think they're really slowly but surely, not slowly, but like under the radar, sliding up the table and putting in these really good, and besides that loss to Vancouver, really consistent performances. They have a couple tough matches coming up. They have Columbus, Minnesota, and Colorado coming up on the calendar. So those are, it gets a little bit tougher here for Real Salt Lake, but I think that it's a team that is building up a lot of confidence right now, getting these wins, having these guys scoring these goals and just putting on solid performances. They're not blowing teams out of the water, but they are getting good performances. The only thing that I would critique on a little bit more for Real Salt Lake is their clean sheets. They need more clean sheets. They are giving up goals, and some of their games have been a little bit of nail biters. They won 2-1 against both Austin FC and Montreal, so giving up goals and not really giving yourself a margin is probably not the best thing. But so I think Real Salt Lake is doing themselves a lot of favors. And I think that they're doing pretty good. They're sliding up the table under the radar in the West. So jumping back to the East, Jamie, let's hear it about the now Matt Turner-less New England Revolution. I almost said New York Red Bulls.
Yeah, I don't often like to talk about my own team on here, but I thought this, just for this once I would, and granted, hot over the whole season would not be how you would describe the Revs, but bouncing back from where they were, bottom of the standings, out of CCL, conceding goals left, right and centre and making so many mistakes, to now be up into the playoffs in sixth. They're unbeaten in eight, four wins and four draws. So I think there's a lot more positivity in Foxborough with Bruce Arena. There's been some disappointing performances, but I think the key bit that has always come back to has been the results. Tommy McNamara, ahead of the game against the Whitecaps this weekend, was talking about that, and he said that specifically the Minnesota game, they didn't feel they performed that well. But the sign of a great team is to get over the line and still get that 3 points. And I think in a 7-day stretch, they played three games, beat Minnesota and SKC and drew Orlando, which I think is huge, really, for a team that's had a lot of question marks about their depth. And to keep picking up results is all you can do, even when the performances aren't there. And also, as Rachel mentioned, they are now Matt Turnerless and Adam Buxerless as well. Boots has gone off to Lawns in France, and of course, Turner's made that big move to Arsenal, and there's a lot of question marks about him not starting or playing at all in a send-off game. He said that it was to do with an illness. I'm not sure. Rachel maybe has something to say about that later, but I'll leave that to her. In terms of the players that are on the pitch and are at the club, seemingly as soon as Books is out of the picture, Gustavo Bowes, who had been injured the whole of the season, has come back. He's got 3 and 4 now. He's been firing. He's built a very strong relationship with new arrival Dylan Barrera already. And then on top of Barrera, who got his goal against Minnesota, Petrovic, the new goalkeeper, is also getting a lot of praise. Turner was praising him a lot, saying how much he's seen from him already and how impressed he's been about his successor. So I think there's a lot of positivity in and around the Revs, whereas a couple of months ago there was next to nothing. And with a trip to the Whitecaps, as I mentioned, this weekend, I think very good chance to make that unbeaten streak up to 9 games, and the Revs could easily keep pushing it in and then have a good postseason maybe.
Good stuff, Jamie. We are going to talk about our teams that are not doing so hot on the table right now and or have a tough road coming up. Harvey, I am going to love this one. As a Seattle Sounders fan, I love anything negative being said about Portland. So please dunk on Portland for me and do not spare the harsh words.
Well, I'll try to be professional for this one, but I'm just saying, remember when, it wasn't that long ago, that Portland played Sporting Kansas City and won 7-2. That was on May 14th. Since then, they've lost to San Jose, lost to Philadelphia, lost into Miami, and drew against the Galaxy. They went from just being on the precipice of making like a playoff spot to now being 1 point ahead of San Jose for last in the West. They've had a dismal offseason, and it shows. Nothing is going right for this team. They have conceded already 26 goals in the Western Conference. Somehow, only Sporting Kansas City, Vancouver, and San Jose have conceded more. They have only won 3 out of a possible 16. They've lost 6 games already. They just can't seem to get anything going for this team. It's weird. Excuse me. They have only won 2 at home, which has always been their forte. And they've only won 1 away from home. So, excuse me. They just can't seem to get anything going, with offensively or through their midfield. Yimi Chara is still one of the better players, which is fine, but they still need more. I mean, Bill Tuiloma is their leading scorer, which says it all about their strikers. Nils Gorda is their leading striker with 3 goals. Sebastian Blanco can't do it all on his own, despite him only having 5 assists for the team. They don't get many shots on target. They don't really create much. And they're just sliding. So here's what they have upcoming. They host Colorado They host Houston, and then they go to Nashville before they play Seattle and Vancouver for that Cascadia trip in early July. So we're going to see what they're made of. But if they don't get this stuff fixed already, I know that we're halfway through the season, and they're only 4 points out of a playoff spot, which Seattle has as the last playoff spot in the West. But if they don't get this stuff turned around, you could just write them off already. By the way, Seattle, because of their Champions League exploits, have two games in hand of Portland and three games in hand of Sporting Kansas City. So you expect them to rise up the table like the champs that they are. So, but yeah, Portland, they're just showing what a bad offseason can do for a team. And they need to get it fixed. I believe in Giovanni Cerveci. I love him. He's one of my favorites. But we're going to see what more out of the lemon he can squeeze out of this bunch. So we're going to see how they carry on with this.
Okay, Harvey, not as harsh as I hoped it would be. I'm kidding. I will give it to you there. I also do really like Giovanni Cerveci. So it was always hard for me whenever he went to Portland, because I was like, now I can't like you. A team that I do like, gentlemen, and a team that once upon a time when I was a youngin and started my days out here on the Last Word Soccer Club Radio podcast, and we were doing pick'ems for the season as we did earlier this year, I had a lot of high hopes for FC Cincinnati. I let them fool me by their dominance in the USL, and I was like, oh yeah, they're going to make the playoffs in their first year. And then they didn't. And then I was like, you know what? Second time's the charm. And then they kept disappointing me. And to this day, Dan and Matt hold it over my head that I was a believer of FC Cincinnati when they were basically hot garbage. But boys, I am worried. I'm worried about FC Cincinnati right now. They were, they had a really hot start, and now they're kind of trickling back to their old ways of losing and just losing in bad form. Jamie remembers this one whenever they beat, or whenever they lost to New England Revolution in the Open Cup 5-1, and that kind of started the domino effect. After that, they did beat Chicago, but then they lost a 3-2 game against New England again, this time, of course, in MLS play. And then a 4-3 loss to Montreal. They did draw Philadelphia, which was a tough challenge because Philadelphia has been a good team in these last couple years. And they're a good team this year. But I'm worried, guys. I'm worried about FC Cincinnati and if they're slipping back into their old ways. And listen, the road for them, not easy. Orlando, New York City FC, New England Revolution, New York Red Bulls. That's a tough slate of four games coming up for them. I don't see them getting results against New England and Red Bulls. Who knows about New York City FC? Red Bulls could have shaken them up in their boots with that Open Cup loss. And then Orlando is always kind of hit or miss, I feel like. Some weeks they're good, some weeks they're bad. They definitely have troubles with consistency, but I don't know. I'm worried about them. I think they're on the cold streak right now. I would love to see them get back on the hot streak because they do not have a friendly slew of matches here in the middle of the season. So I'm definitely worried about them and what they are gonna do. Jamie, I have to admit, I'm intrigued to hear your reasoning for your pick. I was quite surprised to see that when I was looking at the doc earlier. So give us your cold team and why you think that they are cold.
So I don't want to go in too hard, given that Matt Pollard's not here to defend his Rapids. So I want to give him that chance. But I think just in terms of where they are at the moment and where they probably should be, they're ninth in the West. In the last 10 games, they performed pretty poorly. Although the games they have won have been ones you wouldn't expect them to almost, but yeah, of course, the last 10 games, they'd be 20th in the standings overall. And yeah, three wins, which have come against LAFC, Seattle and Portland, which on paper seems very weird and might not serve my case very well. But then they've also lost to SKC, Minnesota and Nashville recently. And there's not a lot going on in the attacking department. Jesse Zardes has got just one goal in nearly 500 minutes for the team since making that switch from Columbus, and that goal came from the penalty spot. Diego Rubio is their only real outlet when it comes to goals, leading the team with 7. Next after him is Marc-Anthony Kay on 3, so that says all you need to know. And I think they're definitely a playoff team, you would imagine. And after what they put together last year under Robin Fraser, you'd assume they would be able to turn it round, but it just there's a lack of attacking prowess going forward, and with the lack of infrastructure that clubs had and the lack of investment compared to some others around them, while someone like Zardes makes a lot of sense and could easily turn it round, the Rapids are just not quite at it, not quite the race at the moment. I think they may sneak into the playoffs, but they've got a job on their hands to do so.
Fair critique for the Colorado Rapids, and appreciate your respect to Matt Pollard for not going too far in deep there. Throwing it back to Harvey, we have some potential news live on the Last Word Soccer Club radio podcast.
This isn't like earth-shattering or whatnot, but Football Americas, which is a fine program, by the way, on ESPN Plus, has the U.S. Open Cup draw for the semifinals. And basically, I'm going to try to get to you guys this soon. But the winner of Orlando City, Nashville, will host the Eastern semifinal against the Red Bulls. And Sacramento Republic will host Sporting Kansas City. So that'll be quite the scene there in Southern California. So that is the news for what should be a very fun semifinal round of the Open Cup, which has been a really good tournament, if you really think about it. Yes, big stuff.
Sacramento? Wow. Okay, good for them. Even more exciting that, you know, that there's been talks about the Bay Area potentially getting an NWSL team. So anything highlighting the Bay Area is okay in my book. I'm very surprised about that. But that's cool news, and that's good news. So thank you for sharing that for our awesome listeners. We are going to go now into the roundtable here, folks, and we are going to talk about the brand spanking new news that FIFA World Cup, they're doing it. They are expanding their rosters from 23 players to 26. It goes into effect for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, which, I mean, I don't know what the countdown is off the top of my head, but it's like 140-something days away. Folks, just a quick little plug too. If you have no idea what to do this summer when watching soccer, because the World Cup is now in the fall because of the temperatures in the Middle East, CONCACAF Women's Championship starts on July 4th. We will have coverage here at Last Word on Soccer. And then also the women's UEFA Euro competition is going to be happening in England, right, Jamie? It's going to be in England. Lots of eyes on the Lionesses, lots of good teams, of course, FC Barcelona, but Spain, just Spain, definitely a favorite to win it as well. So if you have no idea what to watch this summer, those are two really good tournaments going on. Women's AFCON is going on as well. And I think Women's AFCON, I want to say it's on Paramount Plus, but I'm not 100% sure about that. CONCACAF Women's Championship is on Paramount Plus, and then I don't know in the U.S. where the Euro games are, but I will find out and I will put it in the show notes for sure. So definitely check those out this summer. But we are going to jump into a little bit of a discussion here. This is our only roundtable topic. Guys, what do you think about the World Cup jumping to 26 players? And then if you have any thoughts, what is – and, of course, Jamie, you can talk about England here too. Please feel free. What does this mean for the U.S.? What does this mean for England? And come on, I mean, there's no reason why Greg Berhalter can't call John Brooks in now, right? Right? Someone tell me I'm right.
I was gonna. Three extra spots is bigger than one would think. just because of the fact that you're going to be in a, especially in this case, because you're in a whole new country. You're going to be playing teams that are going to throw different tactical looks at you, whether it's England playing the U.S. or the U.S. playing or Wales in this table, or for the U.S., just the fact that you can now bring in a left-footed left-back into the squad, hopefully. That should be something of import. Because let's be honest, if you pay attention to the qualifiers, the friendlies, and anything in between, you kind of already have a feeling of what the best 11 or what the best starting 11 is going to be, and what the subs are going to be. If once you know that, then the 3x spot should be just for like, this should be for like different tactical looks. It shouldn't be for an extra goalkeeper. It shouldn't be for an extra striker, really. It should be either for a versatile defender, a versatile midfielder, or some sort of winger that you know is going to get hot. I'm not sure who those guys are going to be per name for the U.S. I understand the John Brooks shout-out, Rachel. I just don't know if he can complement this current setup, which is a weird thing because he is good. And given the fact that Aaron Long has supplanted him, Walker Zimmerman has supplanted him, Chris Richards seems to be up next, Cameron Carter-Vickers seems to be up next. It seems like they've already set at center back. I'm just not sure what adding John Brooks would do instead of adding maybe a Gio Reyna if he comes in and he's fully fit by the time the World Cup is on, or if you want to bring in an MLS striker or whatnot, if you want to bring in, or if you, for some reason you want to keep Paul Arriola over someone else, I'm just joking. But that just comes with Greg Berhalter's brain, and I'm sure people will be very, very civil with who he picks for the World Cup, because Greg Berhalter has done nothing wrong so far, and he's only just gotten positive results. So I'm sure USMNT Twitter will be very fine. There won't be no pitchforks on fire like The Simpsons. It's going to be all skies and rainbows.
Oh, Harvey, you don't know, son. It's USMNT Twitter. Come on now. Jamie, what are your thoughts on the new role?
I think, yeah, I can't necessarily speak to it from a USMNT point of view in much depth. I'd say for both England and the USMNT, it's probably one of the best squads they've both ever had. So the option to have three extra players is it could be very important to just get more talent on the plane. And as Harvey said, to sort out specific tactical choices against various opponents who you may not know a whole lot about could make all the difference. And I don't know what history it has with the US, but England had this 26-man squad implemented at the Euros, where they obviously got to the final and lost to Italy. So it's something we've experienced before and were able to utilise, I think. There was players who otherwise wouldn't have gone that ended up playing a sizable role due to various injuries. So I think it definitely makes sense. And yeah, when you get to a foreign country like Qatar with the issues when it comes to climate and the temperature that specifically people from England won't be so much used to, I think it can be a key asset to have those few extra players to just keep everyone ticking over. Yeah.
Good insight for sure. Man, I'll die on the hill for John Brooks. I really will for the USMNT. I think his experience is just too valuable, and I think his play speaks for itself. Before we go into pick-ems, Harvey, another little bit of Open Cup news?
Yeah, the Open Cup is a bit weird with this stuff, but I'll just say this. They've made their hosting priority order. And so from 4-1, Sacramento Republic is 4, so they won't host. They'll just be they'll be the visitors for the final. The Red Bulls are 3, so So that means that if Sacramento makes the final and the Rebels make the final, the Rebels can only host the final if Sacramento makes it as the opponent. Sporting Kansas City is too. So that means that the winner of Orlando City and Nashville will not only host the semifinal, but if Nashville or Orlando makes it to the final, they host the final, which only means one thing and one thing only. Rachel Krieger might go to a cup final soon enough this year if Orlando City does the business.
When's it supposed to be?
Oh, that's a good question.
When's the date? Because that depends if I'm still in the state. Because if they host, and also if Orlando City wins and they host Red Bulls, when's that game?
The semifinals are in July, which is obvious because we're almost at the end of June. I believe they're in mid-July. So I'm going to guess that the August is when we'll see the final.
I will not be there for a cup final then.
Don't worry about it. You'll make it.
Don't worry about it. Okay.
Which also means our buddy Daniel Sperry could also make the final as well. If Sporting Kansas City wins out and they host either and they can only host the Rebels as well for hosting priority. So, which would be a rematch of the 2017 final. Exactly. The Sporting Kansas City hosted that final. And that wasn't a good day for me. So, whatever. But that's the hosting priority. Orlando City, Nashville can only host the final. And so does Sporting Kansas City. New York Rebels can only host the final if Sacramento makes the final. So, Sacramento cannot host the final. They are last. So, there you have it.
Bummer. Bummer for Sacramento. But hey, at least they're hosting Sporting Kansas City. Speaking of Sporting Kansas City, that's a good way to segue into pick'ems. So we're going to do some pick'ems. We are going to start, all these games are nationally televised, folks. So we will start with my Seattle Sounders. This is the Dan Rachel Derby. Seattle Sounders versus Sporting Kansas City on June 25th at 3 p.m. on ABC and ESPN Deportes. This one's going to be a good one, guys. What do you think? I'll let you guys pick first. Go ahead, Harvey.
I will go Seattle 2, Sporting Kansas City 1. It's very possible that Sporting Kansas City could steal a draw because they picked up their form as of late, and they really need that Nashville win. So, it depends how they approach this game in the early goings. But I like Seattle better for this one. I'll go 2-1 Seattle.
A fine choice. How about you, Jamie?
I also would definitely be leaning towards a Seattle win here. And I think, well, so obviously Sporting Kansas City did have that emphatic cup victory over Union Omaha. The league table and league form speaks for itself. And I'd probably be going more emphatic than that. I'll say 4-0 Seattle. Why not? Emphatic, easy win for the Champions League champions.
I love it. That's such a good pick. I believe in Stephen Fry. I think he's easily the best goalkeeper in MLS right now. And that's a hill I will die on. Give me 2-0 Seattle. Yeah, give me 2-0. Give me the clean sheet. Next up, gentlemen, on big ESPN and ESPN Deportes, we have, oh man, my DC United versus Nashville SC on Saturday, June 25th at 5 p.m. Eastern. I'll be a realist here and say Nashville. I'm going to go Nashville 3-1. I'll be generous and give DC United a goal. But that's not to say I still don't have hope in them. I see the look that Harvey's giving me, still wondering why I picked them as number 2 in the East. But I believe in DC United. Jamie, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I do tend to lean towards your way of thinking that leaving in DC. Every time I've seen them, they've maybe not the best of teams, but any time I watch Taxi Fintas since he's joined the league, I'm always impressed. So on that basis alone, it might not be the strongest case, but I'm going to say it'll be a 1-1 draw. Taxi Fintas magic for a goal for DC.
Go ahead, Harvey. What do you think?
Jamie pulled up the taxi. Fontes, I'll raise you a Henny Mukhtar because this is going to be the Henny Mukhtar show. I will go 2-0 Nashville all over the brand, the newly minted MLS All-Star host Audi Field for 2023. So I will go Nashville 2-0 over DC United. And by the way, don't look now, but it's a very sneaky good game on this same day, the 25th. That is Austin hosting Dallas, 3-4 in the Western Conference, which is a really big one. So I can't wait to see that one personally. But yes, 2-0 Nashville over DC United.
That would have been one of our pick-ems if it was a nationally televised game, that's for sure. That is definitely going to be a good game as well. Moving on to Sunday's slate of games, there's a couple nationally televised games here as well. One of them being the number one team in the West, LAFC, taking on a very red-hot New York Red Bulls on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern time on ABC and ESPN Deportes. Let's let our friend Harvey Cruz go first here. Why are the Red Bulls going to shock LAFC, Harvey?
They will shock LAFC if they can get a goal early. I don't see it that way personally. I see this 1-1. This is first against fifth in the Supporters Shield standings. They're only 4 points separated from each other. And for my money, it's the game of the week. And I'm glad this has got that primetime viewing at 3 p.m. on ABC. So that's how you know it's a big game. Rebels haven't won at Banc of California Stadium yet. They've only played there once, and they lost there 4-2. So I can't wait to see how this game shapes up. And if the Rebels pull off a result here, then they should really be looked at as one of the very best teams in all of MLS. Because not only to beat NYCFC and LAFC in the same week, but to keep up their form on the road, despite having lost the previous two outings on away from home, it would really show you something as a real contender to win away at California and LAFC. So I really can't wait for this one.
Harvey, who you got? Jamie, who you got and why?
Having listened to what Harvey had to say about the Red Bulls earlier, gave an impassioned speech, so I'm gonna heed to that advice, and I'm going to say the Red Bulls are going to do it in LA. I think Steve Trundle has done a very impressive job so far. A lot of impressive domestic signings, which most of which are paying dividends. But I still think the Red Bulls will get it done in LA, and I'll say a 3-2 win for the Red Bulls. It'll be a lively game as well.
I want to say the Red Bulls here. And I don't think LAFC is going to win, but I think for some reason I'm sniffing a 2-2 draw with just a lot of chaos going on. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Red Bulls get the upset, but I definitely just, for some reason, I'm getting a vibe that LAFC is going to get like a last minute like equalizer, and all sorts of chaos is going to happen. So hopefully that prediction doesn't upset you too much, Harvey. I would be very happy with a New York Red Bulls win, but just for some reason I'm getting last-minute goal-at-the-bank vibes. And then, of course, our last nationally televised game on Sunday is 6 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 and Fox Deportes. We've got I called Jamie Harvey, and now I'm calling Philadelphia LAFC. Philadelphia versus New York City FC. There we go. Jamie, tell us who you got and why.
Well, the Union have been somewhat of a draw specialist recently, but I'm actually going to steer away from that and say that I think every time I watch NYCFC, they seem somewhat unstoppable, somewhat inevitable, got so many good pieces going forward. Even if Castellanos does leave soon, I still think they'll be in capable hands with the likes of Talos Magno. So I'm actually going to go for a 2-0 NYFC win at Subaru Park.
Harvey, who you got and why?
This is a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Final, also known around MLS circles as the COVID Conference Final because of Philadelphia's COVID outbreak, I believe the days before the game. This is also first against third in the East. And you want to know something funny? You could see two or three teams get up to first in the East and switch spots because the top four in the East are separated by 2 points. Orlando plays Cincinnati Friday night. If they win, they go first ahead of the weekend. And the Rebels could be in first before this game if they beat LAFC. So Werner here basically takes first place for the time doing. Jamie says they are a draw specialist, and they definitely are. So that's where I'm going to go because this game is going to be heated. These two are rivals. Don't forget Philadelphia beat City at Yankee Stadium earlier this year. I'm going to go 1-1. I think this is going to be an impassioned, heated draw. Just the way it goes between these two teams. These two, I guess, newfound rivals now. So 1-1.
I am going to go with Philadelphia getting the win here. I'm going to go 2-1. I don't think they get the clean sheet, though. But that's going to do it for pick'ems for us. So we are going to move on here to last words. I'm very confused with what AJ stands for here. So I'm going to have Jamie go first so he can explain his last words and educate the people. And then we will jump right into Harvey.
So AJ, Anthony Joshua, boxer, one of my favorites, big into my boxing and not too impressed to see the latest news that AJ's rematch against Alexander Usyk is going to be in Saudi Arabia. It's his second fight in Saudi Arabia for Andrew Ruiz in his rematch in Saudi Arabia. And it's obviously the obvious ethical issues surrounding the country. It's to have such a major sport event over there is not good at all. And then obviously that bleeds into Qatar World Cup as well. Being in Qatar, there's a lot of lack of ethics in sports at the moment. I think the bottom line is that money talks and money's clearly talking at the moment with these sorts of events. And then just to after someone, what Rachel said earlier made me think of it as well. Following the Euro 2022 next month starts in less than 2 weeks. I should be supporting England, and I think England should do quite well. But there's so many teams to keep an eye out for, whether it be Spain, the Netherlands, Sweden, Norway. Ada Hegberg's finally back into the national picture, which is hugely exciting. Haven't watched her in a major tournament since taking an interest in the women's game, so I'm very excited for that. I think there's so many teams that could win it that you'd be stupid to miss out on it.
Oh, and Jamie, tell us where we can find you on Twitter too.
My at is rookiejnr13, and I'm actually on the Last Word on Soccer's sister or brother website, Last Word on Football. I'll be covering the Euros as much as possible, so I'll also have a lot of content about that over there.
Oh, cool. Can't wait to read it. Harvey, sir, tell us where people can find you and give us your last words.
Sir Harvey Cruz on Twitter, Sir Harvey Cruz on Instagram. Follow me there for all the banter and whatnot, all the articles, of course, and all the analysis that I try to give. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but lately Toronto FC have announced a stadium expansion ahead of the World Cup. And I guess a bit unrelatedly, Houston Dynamo have also released new renderings and major upgrades to their stadium, PNC Stadium. And look, Houston is a really cool town, I guess, and has a really nice stadium. Their Dynamo fans are diehards. They were awesome team back in the mid-2000s with Brian Ching and the boys. They desperately need a playoff appearance, much less a playoff run, because ever since they beat the Union to win the Open Cup a few years ago, it's been going downhill. And this Dynamo Stadium looks cool and all, but it's missing one thing, and it's a roof, a sunroof. Because I don't know if you noticed, but the temperatures in Houston are no joke, much less Texas or FC Dallas. I'm not sure how Austin is doing it, but they sell out that stadium like it's nothing. Houston, much less so. They don't really sell out that well these days. And listen, these venues are cool enough, but you're going to make it without like a sunroof or any type of roof that at least can prevent rain. It's not the best way to go about it. I mean, like my Red Bull Stadium has an arch has like a loop for a roof that blocks all the rain from coming in. Listen, you can only do so much against the Heat. But yeah, that Houston Dynamo Stadium needs a roof in the worst way, because I'm sure that when the sun comes down, there's going to be multiple hydration breaks. Fans are going to be moving from their areas to more shaded areas, which is only going to be cause crowding in areas. So hopefully the Dynamo can come up with some more money to put up a roof and prevent some heating for fans. They do have mesh seats, which I believe allows airflow through the seating. But that can only do so much. So, yeah. Put a roof on it, Houston.
Put a roof on it. You heard him loud and clear, folks. Before we get into my last words, just a big thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Don't forget to get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And then, gentlemen, are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, your Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Ickers FC can help you create the kit of your dreams today at an affordable price. With the motto, any design you want, seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Quick plug, and then I will talk about my last words. And I literally just forgot what my quick plug was about. It probably has something to do with my last words. But anyway, Jenny Hermoso is joining Club Pachuca Femenil. I work for Equalizer Soccer, one of, in my opinion, the better women's soccer websites in the United States, but I will leave that at that. So I am the lead Liga MX Femenil person over there. I had approached Jeff a couple years ago and said, hey, it's a league that needs to be covered. And boy, has it skyrocketed from where it started to where it is now. The Apertura starts actually in a couple weeks. It actually starts in the middle of the CONCACAF Women's Qualifiers. But it's such a great league. And the fact that now a player like Jenny Hermoso, that's a big deal, guys. I mean, she's a UEFA Women's Champions League winner. She is a star for Spain, was a star at FC Barcelona. And for her to, you know, skip over the NWSL and go to Liga MX Femenil, and even at that, go to a Club Pachuca. They, of course, were in the Clausura final, lost against Chivas Femenil, which was actually here's a quick history lesson for you. In the very first Liga MX Femenil final, that was the final two, and Chivas won that match. So again, history repeated itself. Chivas won. But for a player to choose a club like Club Pachuca and not Chivas or Tigres or CF Monterrey, that's a huge deal. So it just shows the growth of the league. That league is actually getting VAR for the upcoming season, kind of as a little ha-ha in your face to the NWSL. And they made the jump from if you don't know, gentlemen, they used to have, if you weren't a Mexican international, you could not play for the league. They opened it up, had one international spot, then they made it into two. Now they're making it so each team can have four international spots, which is a huge jump from two to four. So it's a great league. And so for a player like Jenny Hermoso to go there is pretty remarkable. Stay tuned, last word on soccer, for coverage of the CONCACAF Women's Championship. Sadly, I won't be around to cover much of the tournament. I will be on vacation, and I was told no work while on vacation, so I'll have to sneak a couple games. I'm a huge Costa Rica fan, if you don't know. Huge Costa Rica and El Tri Femenil fan. And as much as I do support the U.S. Women's National Team, I would not mind seeing one of those teams beat them. That's for sure. As long as Costa Rica and Mexico make the World Cup, I will be happy. But that tournament kicks off on the 4th of July. So I will be able to at least watch the first couple games and then watch the finals in time for when I get back from vacation. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Don't forget, folks, to follow Oh yeah, by the way, my Twitter is at Rachel Krieger, two A's, not just one. But follow our site on Twitter at LastWordSC. We are lastwordonsports.com/soccer. Thank you again to the Beautiful Game Network, Last Word on Sports, Inc., Roughneck Scars, and Icarus FC. Oh, and I remember the plug now. Stay tuned. Next week, myself, Raheem, we are going to try to get Daniel Sperry in there as well to talk about the upcoming CONCACAF Women's Championship. So stay tuned, on the lookout for that. It's going to be a really good preview episode. Oh, and of course, Trevor Tracy is going to join us for that one as well. But thanks, Internet. We will see you next time. And that will do it for myself, for Harvey, for Jamie. Have a good rest of June.